If you're a founder, COO, or VP of ops scaling a team, but behind the scenes, it feels like duct tape and chaos, then you need Ops Elevate. We help growing companies build clear systems, training, and onboarding that actually scale with your business, not against it. Stop losing time, money, and talent to broken operations. Book your free Ops Readiness audit at the link in the description, because growth without systems is just chaos with good branding. Welcome to Unmuted, where real men reclaim their voice, their values, and their vision. I'm your host, Chris Williams. I'm a husband, a father, and a former corporate guy who's been laid off twice and had to rebuild things from the ground up. This show is for men who are done suffering in silence. If you're in your 30s, 40s, or 50s, trying to lead well, love deeply, and build something that lasts, this is the place for you. Every week, we're going to talk real life about faith, marriage, fatherhood, business, reinvention, and what it means to live unmuted in a world that tries to silence you. If you're tired of the noise and ready to hear the truth, you're in the right place. Let's get to it. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I hope you're doing well on this day. Listen, this is probably going to be one of the most efficient videos that I do. And the reason is because of the topic itself. And so I'm actually just going to dive right into this conversation because I think this is something that a lot of people already know about. If you're joining live, feel free to let me know down in the comments. Post your questions down in the comments as well, because today what we're going to do is we're just going to address a big elephant in the room. We're going to stop firing people. Yeah, you and I as leaders, we're going to stop firing people. I think the days of just firing for firing's sake and cost savings and all these other things, there's a hidden danger that is happening way too often. And I almost liken it to what's happening in sports. As many of you know, I love the NBA. So to kind of start this conversation, I want us to think about when we watch our favorite sports teams. I love the NBA, love all things about the NBA. Of course, I'm totally involved right now with all of the trades and what's happening now the draft is over and all those different things. But here's what I want to share. Anytime you are developing or you have a team, and as that team seems to make some version of progress, the team starts to grow. The fans are showing up more. The turnstiles, there's more tickets, there's more popcorn, there's more beer sold. People are starting to show up because the team is winning. Well, we have this hidden assumption that as things get better per se, that we should be looking for the best talent. And while that might be true, and I do not like disagree with that, I don't think that there's anything wrong with looking for best talent. The one thing that we have done a poor job of is actually improving the systems that actually can develop great talent. So what's happened is we've traded development for looking for the quote unquote one and done in basketball, right? Like Cooper Flagg this year is the number one option. You know, he's the man. So everybody, you know, couldn't wait. And how in the world he ended up with the Dallas Mavericks, that's just a whole nother can of worms. But the point is, all of these number ones coming out of college has done a terrible disservice, because there's always a consequence to every action. Well, what's the consequence with all of these number ones, you know, one and done people, especially, you know, John Calipari has definitely admitted that as coming out of, you know, Kentucky and his places and lots of other coaches. Well, what's the consequence? The consequence is we have just assumed you should be ready made, and we no longer spend time on development. So colleges aren't trying to develop a player, because they're looking for the superstar coming in ready to go day one. NBA teams aren't developing players because they're looking for the kid that's going to come in at 18 and be like a LeBron James or a Kobe Bryant and just get to it. And the reality is 99% of us who work a day job, who working for a corporation, who are climbing your corporate career, who are managing groups and leadership and all those different things, the truth of the matter is, you need development. You need to be developed into that role. And so what I want to do is talk about this big elephant in the room is that we're firing people too fast. We let people go too fast. And it's what's happening is it's actually highlighting a deficiency in our system. It's highlighting a deficiency in the operating system and the culture by which people are working. And so I want to kind of talk about this today, and I want to walk through some things that we should be doing instead of just firing people, right? And I want you to just stop and think for 2 seconds. So when you watch this video, whether you're the leader or you're inside of the organization having to lead a bunch of teams, no matter where you are, I just want you to take a step back for a second, and I want you to ask yourself this question and go find the real answer. I really want you to find out how long people are staying with teams. What's the churn rate right now in certain roles? The higher the role, are people staying longer? Are they leaving quicker? Do you understand the reasons they're leaving? Like, I really want you to find that out. Like, really go find that out after you watch this. So that way you just have a eyes wide open picture of what's really going on in your business. But let's kind of go through some of these, because there's a couple of things that I realized. I think the first thing to kind of lay out in context is that when I worked, 18 years in corporate, I realized a couple of things. Number one, I realized that, hey, you know what? The idea of growing fast seems really fun, except for the fact when roles start to get really blurry. When people start tripping over the next person and now territorialism starts to creep in and people feel like, well, that's my job. Well, that's my job. And now you start having these little micro fractions of the team, and these little splits and this tribalism starts happening, and the little petty arguments start getting worse because everybody's fighting for validation. That's a systems problem, right? Or you start to notice that you hire people because you're growing fast, but now what's suffering as a result? The training gets rushed. And it's actually not training, if we can just be honest. The training is just go follow Joe for the next 30 days. And I need you to be as good as Joe, who's been here for 9 years. I need you to be that good in 3 months. That's what training looks like in a fast growing company. Even for well-established legacy companies, you see it all the time. And so what happens is we got blurry roles because things are moving quickly. We're rushing the training. And the expectation is not that we fix the system. The actual expectation is if people are not performing, that's someone's head on a stick. That's actually what's happening. We see it all the time. You've seen it. You've watched it. You've even experienced it. You probably have even been a victim to it, right? So what I want to do is I want to break up the ideas that are permeating our systems and our offices and our culture. And I want to give us some tangible things to think about, right? Because the unfortunate part is when we assume that somebody is not delivering, the very first thing we do is we basically throw them out. So we say, hey, you've been in this role for 6 months. We're not seeing what we want. We're going to have to go a different direction. And here's the question that I would pose, and I would ask all of you, you could put this down in the comments, but I would ask every single one of us, did that person really even have a shot to start? Did they? Did they really have a shot? Like, did we put things in place so that that particular hire for that particular role with that particular set of deliverables even had a shot? Because if you start going back and going back to the first question I asked you, once you watch this video, go back and look at the churn for certain roles in certain places, and then go look back at, do you even capture the reasons people are walking out? Because at the end, I'm actually going to walk you through something. It's going to hurt a little bit, but it will also help. Because just like going into a doctor, if you are, you rushed in the ER and there was something traumatic that happened, some of the saving grace is going to hurt you in the beginning, but it's only to help you. It's going to hurt, but I'm going to help you. Okay. But let's deconstruct some of what's happening. And I'm actually give you a couple of tangible things that I want us to be able to walk through, first of all. Okay. So I think the very first thing to slow down on this just quick firing of people so that we can actually give people a chance is, I think the first thing we got to go back and look at is the role actually documented? And do we actually understand what success looks like right now? I'm not asking about, did you put up an HR job description and that's what everybody should go to, because you and I both know the job description as posted to get people in interested in the role is not always exactly what they're actually going to be doing throughout the day, the job. And we know that that thing will actually morph. So I'm asking the question because I really want you to slow down and think about it. Is the role actually documented? And do we review it often so we update it? And is it clear to the person who is executing against that role? It's just a question, but I think it could be helpful when we start talking about improving how our systems operate and how the culture is designed, right? Remember, you are designing your culture, whether you're intentional about it or unintentional, it's being designed, right? So as a leader, this is really important. And then what does success look like? Not some abstract art painting for other people to interpret. And then you get to decide, yeah, I like this, I don't like that. No. What is it actually? Are there certain deliverables that are just that important and critical? Is that documented? Is there a particular way you expect people to show up? Is that documented? Now, you might be going, well, I'm in a large company. I've been here for a while. How can I? Here's how you can actually deal with that. Because I think one of the things that even when you're in a large company, if you're not in a fast growing moving company, like 50, 200 employees, this is a little bit more malleable. But if you're in a larger company that's been around for a while, you can still make an impact on this. Here's how. The very first thing I would definitely do is make sure that you carve out time with your teams, with your leadership, and say, hey, I want to make sure that we review the roles. I just want to make sure that we're still on the same page, because you might find out that as you go through that stuff and you go through what's actually being delivered versus what's on paper, some things may have changed. That's why the one-on-ones can sometimes end up a lot of friction, because you know that there's an expectation, but it's also not documented. And so expectations uncommunicated that are not documented create confusion, and it's not clarity. So we want to, you know, eliminate some of that. So the very first one is we want to make sure that we're documenting the role and we're asking, what does success look like? We want to review the onboarding. We want to review onboarding because the question we want to ask is, you know, hey, was it even consistent? Right? Like from person to person, is the onboarding in our system, in our ecosystem, actually consistent? Do you know as a leader? If you don't, this is a fair question that we should be asking. Is the onboarding today a consistent onboarding? Here's one of the most interesting things. I remember this as a project, and it blew my mind. One particular project I was working on, we looked at the HR process for hiring inside of this company, right? And as we were looking at we looked at the entire scope of the process. I'm talking about from the moment internally we knew there needs to be a hire, creating the rec, all the screens that the manager had to go through to put the requisition in place, the approval process, the external look, all of this stuff. We literally broke down, how does it look today and what all does it take and what all has to happen for that person to get hired? I'm about to blow your mind for a second. When we did that, you will be shocked to find out there were over 70 screens that a manager had to go through in order to be able to put a requisition in and get the job out onto public site. 70. This is a real project that I actually worked on, and it took us probably about a year and a half to make more efficient. 70, because no one had actually stopped to look at how complicated over the years and decades this particular process had become. Well, no wonder why nobody wants to actually go hire people, because they're not, it's not that they don't want good talent. The process is too complicated.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
So what do? We force everybody currently in the company to just do more. Because we know the system is broken, but we don't want to answer it. We don't want to address it, right? Is it consistent? Now, in this particular case on this project, it was actually consistent. And managers complained all the time. Leadership did nothing about it. Well, we came along. We decided to start working on this project. We did not know what we were getting our hands into. It was a rough project. However, we were able to pare down from 70 different screens, which, oh, by the way, it took about, 6 months to hire somebody. So we went from 70 screens to about 6 months to hiring. We got it down, the first iteration, down to 30 screens. And about 4.5 months to hiring. The second iteration, we got it down to just simply, get this, 14 different screens. So 70 to 14, and the hiring process went from about 6 months, ultimately down to about 2.5. Now, why did that come up? Because we were listening to the complaints, because we were understanding what was taking so long. We heard from the people who were being interviewed, who finally got on board, and we listened to the managers. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are not looking at your hiring process to understand the onboarding process, don't review it to make it a pie in the sky. Review it as it actually is, and then ask people, what was that like for you? Take the real honest truth. And then you can start to improve on it. All right. So that's a really important piece. But this was a project that I worked on, and it was mind blowing to how cumbersome this process was. OK, let's move on to the next one. OK, here's something that I think that is really important so that we get past this firing people too fast. And I think it's a hack. This is a real hack. Instead of, you know, why aren't you performing? We got to learn to ask better questions of people who are underperforming. And by the way, when we say underperforming, there's probably a lot of hidden assumptions about what their performance should be. Remember the previous question before, what is success look like in this role? Well, if you haven't defined that, then there's a lot of assumption about what the person should be that would mean they're performing. So you want to ask people, where are you stuck? Better questions lead to better relationships, better outcomes, better the root of the problem, not the branch that the root is sitting on, right? So ask this question of anybody right now that you feel is underperforming in a particular role. Just ask them, hey, where are you stuck? Just ask. They might surprise you. And you can even go further. So you might ask, where are you stuck? You could even ask, can you help me understand what you think your actual role is today and the deliverables that are attached to that? That's a great question. Can you tell me what you think your actual role is today and the deliverables that are attached to that? See, when we ask better questions and we sit back and actually listen, don't assume, ask in a genuine way, and really listen to what they say. Document it if you have to in a meeting in a one-on-one. And then go see if that lines up with what was on paper, what's been communicated. And if it doesn't, that's not a them problem. that's an opportunity for us to step in and leaders and say, hey, look, I apologize. We have not equipped you well for this role. Or you might have to say, hey, look, I apologize. This role has shifted and evolved, and we have not done a good job of ensuring you had what you need and were well equipped for the shift. So let's work on that. See, because here's the thing that I know. The more we start to do that, yes, it takes a little bit of extra step. Yes, it takes a little bit more intentionality. But right now in this economy of just looking for the number one star and the person that's ready to come in day one, that's not a reality of everybody's not a rock star. Some people are developed into rock stars, just like in sports. In basketball, there are so many basketball players who come in and get drafted by the skin of their teeth. And by the time they go through development for real, they come into their own. Ask Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Ask TJ McConnell. Ask Tyrese Halliburton. There are so many NBA stars today who had to develop. Why do we think we have companies, we're running organizations, we're running development groups, and we can just skim on training and development? Training is teaching somebody step by step how to do a job. Development is developing the person who can be best at executing said training or the job that required the training. Training and development are not the same thing. It's not the same thing. I can train my nephew who's 6 on how to type something. I tell him exactly what to do. That's training. Development takes a little bit more intentionality. Takes a lot more in person. Takes a lot more real intentional work so that the person develops into whatever said thing is, right? So listen, this is really important. Ask the person, why are you stuck? Asking better questions gets us what we ultimately want, okay? Because here's something that I have learned, and this is where we're gonna get into more of you as the leader as you're watching this. And it's something I love doing, helping people really start to crack the code on improving their culture. You know, this also helps with tenure as well. People want to stick around for people that they want to work with. But I'm going to tell you one way to make sure that happens is you got to ensure that they are part of the process of building the playbook. Because if they are actually building the playbook, then they actually take ownership of the game. That's right. If you slow down on all this firing and you start to actually deconstruct inside of your system what might be missing using some of these things we've talked about so far, and then you invite people to help design the actual playbook, guess what happens? They take ownership of the game. You don't have to ask people about what the expectations are. They helped design it. You don't have to ask when that deliverable is going to be to me. They helped design it. You don't have to ask, are people actually leading the way you expect inside of your culture with the character and the transparency and handling and triaging situations the right way? Because they actually helped design it. And this is one of the biggest hacks that I have seen happen over and over and over and over again that a lot of leaders miss on. Because you're a leader, you think you have to do everything. Because you're a leader and you have your own deficiencies, you probably don't want other people seeing yours. So what do? You control the entire thing and then tell everybody to execute, mainly because you got a title, you got the salary, you got the job, and people are, scared when they come to work. Not scared necessarily of you, but people want to keep their jobs, man. The economy's tough out here right now, right? So they just do whatever they're told, but you never invite them in. So the pressure that you feel is assumed additional pressure that if you just invited people in to help you design the playbook by which they're executing, they would take more ownership of the game and you wouldn't walk around feeling like nobody's helping me. I'm seen to be doing all of this by myself. If you've ever told yourself that, and if you ever feel that kind of pressure, ding, 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 that should be a hint. I'm not inviting people to help me build and design this playbook. I don't care if you have certain problems that fall on your desk that need to be solved. Ultimately, the problems that need to be solved that fall on your desk as a leader are going to have to be executed by the people who report to you. So why don't you invite them in to solve said problems? Because if you help involve them in solving said problems and take in their input, when they go out and execute, they're going to go out 10 times more harder and faster because it was something that they were included in. So when people help build the playbook, they will take ownership of the game. Okay. Now, here's the last thing that I want to share. I told you this was going to hurt a little bit, but it's just a reality that we need to face, because when we don't fix these problems, when we don't address them, and I don't care, again, I don't care if your company is small, if you only got 50 employees, if you got 200 employees, if you got 2,000 employees, I don't care if you've been around 20, 30 years, this principle will still apply. And it's something that I've always talked about, and I think it's just really important to address. And here is the bigger issue. People do not quit jobs. But they do quit you, they quit confusion, they quit chaos, and they quit leadership when they don't listen. It's just the reality. Think about it. No one says, I'm quitting this job because going to these meetings is too hard, pressing these keys and doing Microsoft Word, Excel, and all these other things, and being an engineer is just too hard. I'm quitting my job. No one says that. You know what they do talk about, though, in the privacy? When they actually do quit a job, they talk about the person that really they could not stand. They talk about the culture and the choking environment that they worked in. They talk about the unrealistic expectations of said person that they had to report to, or the person who had most of the influence in the role, who basically choked everyone else out because they had control issues. That's what they really talk about. That's what they go home to their spouse and talk about. That's what they sit around Saturday morning frustrated with their friends about. That's what on Sunday night they're dreading going back to work in. No one is quitting a job because the job, quote unquote, is too hard. It's the people and the systems and the chaos that make the job hard. So what we have to do as leaders, and the reason why inside of my company and why I help so many people, and I don't mind helping you. And if you need help, just send me a DM. I'll help you out. We will have an easy conversation to see if I can even help you or not. But what you got to realize is, as you are scaling, as you're transforming your organization or your team or your department, no matter what you're doing, you have to invest in the system that they are actually working in. Yes, some of the intangible stuff, the intangible assets cost more when you don't get them right. Culture is an intangible asset. Mess that up and see how much it's going to cost you. It will cost you great talent. You do know that, you know, about when people walk away from a role, about 30, 35, 40% is going to cost you of their salary to replace them. You do realize this stuff, right? Like, you know this. But culture is an intangible asset. I can't put, it's not a cup, right? It's not a pen. It's not a system. It's not a tool. It's not inside of Word or anything. But culture is so important, and it will cost you so much if you don't get it right. If you struggle with communicating difficult things, you will have a very frustrated team, and people will not want to have discussions. People will do their job and just go home, because nobody's actually addressing the real problems. You're not inviting people into the solutions. You're just telling them what to do. These are intangible issues that if you do not address them, they will cost you more than you know. I've watched so many good people, great talent, walk out the door, not because they hated the job. Matter of fact, they walked away from great salaries. You got to start asking yourself a question. If somebody's willing to walk away from a great salary that is providing for their entire family, that is taking care of all they needs, and they're willing to walk away, it can't be that they sucked at doing the job. It had to be an intangible asset that wasn't handled right. They got fumbled somewhere. And I guarantee you, it probably has something to do with your systems and your operations. Okay? So listen, I hope this was helpful to you. If it was, I did not want to be on here long, but if this was helpful to you, tell me down in the comments what stood out to you from this conversation. Because at Ops Elevate, I always say the same thing. Growth without systems is just chaos with good branding. Don't live like that. If you need my help, I'm here. My name is Chris Williams. I hope you found this helpful. Have a great weekend. And man, I'll talk to you in the next time we get together live. But this one was burning and I wanted to be able to help you out. Hope this added some value to you. Talk to you soon. If you're a founder, COO, or VP of ops scaling a team, but behind the scenes, it feels like duct tape and chaos, then you need Ops Elevate. We help growing companies build clear systems, training, and onboarding that actually scale with your business, not against it. Stop losing time, money, and talent to broken operations. Book your free ops readiness audit at the link in the description, because growth without systems, it's just chaos with good branding.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.